of Mr. Brian Lamb on the 19th of, no, on the 26th of April,
yeah,
2001, at his home in Ramsbottom, 107 Albert Street. And we are looking at his working life with the Porritts. Can we just start off with your early life, just to give an overview of it? You were born Shuttleworth.
Yeah.
And where did you go to school?
I went to school at Peel Brow. Went to Peel Brow Infant School, and then went to the senior school, as it was in them days. You know, it was a complete school, was Peel Brow.
And how long were you there?
I was there all my life. You know, from junior school, nursery school, right through to leaving at 15.
Yes, and what happened after 15 then?
Well, when I left school at 15, I went to work at Porritts then. So I started there as the warehouse boy.
So, did you see the job advertised? Or?
No. I had an uncle who worked there, my uncle Horace Kirby. He was an electrician. And my dad asked if I could go as an apprentice electrician, but they didn't want any. They mentioned this job as being the warehouse boy. So it was a job. So, it was quite a good firm to work for.
It
was Porritts.
So it's worth starting there.
Yes, yeah. I mean, really, in those days, you could only get there, more or less, if you had a relation working, you know, for Porritts. It was that sort of, relations and relations, yeah.
And can you remember what you were paid, the first job?
As a warehouse boy, I think my first pay packet was about £1, I think it was about £1.10 a week.
And were there any deductions?
No, there was no deductions out of that, no. And then later on when I worked there, the wage wasn't very big. And they gave me a rise a little bit later on. And I think I finished up with about £2.05 or something like that.
Still as a warehouse?
As a warehouse boy, yeah.
So how long did he do that for?
For about 18 months. 18 months to 2 years. And it was the best job I'd ever had. I really enjoyed it, yeah.
So what year was this now?
1950. I started in 1950. After the Ramy July holidays,
yeah.
I started in 1950. And I used to leave home about 7:15 at morning. I used to walk over at Waterside, over to Stubbins, and used to walk to work. I used to walk back at night at 5:30, yeah. Yeah.
And what did the job entail?
The job entailed, in the warehouse, they used to pack these things in Hessian bales, in big Hessian wrappers. You used to have to stitch them up with a great big needle, and this twine, what they had, you used to have to stitch them up. And they all had to be, you couldn't stitch them with great big stitches. They had to be
half an inch or?
Well, about an inch, yeah. And if they were going abroad, that were for this country, if they were going abroad, they used to have to be about half an inch, you know. They used to have to be all neat.
And what was in them?
Well, it was fabrics what they'd made on the woolen side, as it was then. They had a woolen side and a cotton side. And I worked on the woolen side in the woolen warehouse. And they were mainly woolen fabrics. Quite a lot of them were for conveyor for paper machines, to make the paper and filter the pulp and everything for it all to run through. And there was also what they called card cloths, which were in great big, when they finished, they used to be woven up to about 100 yards long. They used to be rolled up.
What width?
Oh, these were about, I would say about 120, 132 inches wide, you know, so, yeah. So these used to be rolled up. But the felts used to be quite flat. You used to have to pleat them, you know, plate them up. And they used to be wrapped in brown paper. And then sometimes they had a crepe paper with tar in between the crepe paper to stop them getting wet, you know, depending on where they were going, to protect them, yeah. And then they had this Essien wrap round, you know.
But that was done before it came to the warehouse?
No, that was done in the warehouse. Yeah, it was wrapped in the warehouse, yeah.
So how did they handle these big bales?
Well, they used to have cranes and that used to... And what they had in the warehouse, when they used to load them onto a lorry, it was like a loading bay, and they used to back into this bay so that the, you know, the loading bay itself was level more or less with the lorry. So they used to either wheel them on, or roll them on, or lift them on with a great big big crane, a big hoist that they had.
So how many were working in the warehouse?
In the warehouse, I would say roughly about 10 to 12 people. Doing different jobs, you know, doing different...
What was the hierarchy? Was it sort of the...
A foreman. There was a foreman, Mr. Jack Hawkins, who came from Edenfield. His understudy at that time was his brother Roland, who lived out Chatterton Lane. There was Dan Beach. He was the brother-in-law of Roland. There was... Who else was it? Harold Rushton. He came from over Dundee Lane. Did Harold? He worked there all his life. And there was Alan Lummox. He came from Rottenstall. And there was a young man who I took over the warehouse boy from. He used to live up Shuttleworth, Albert Rothwell. He worked in there. And there was a man there who was... called Billy Pilkington. Not very, he was only small, was Billy. He lived on the, in Stubbins. And he was a smashing bloke with Billy. Lovely person.
But you went in as the youngest?
Oh yeah, I was the youngest, yeah. Yeah. And there was also some ladies who worked in what they called a sewing room at the side. They used to make, you know, sew blankets, and we used to sew... what they call sieves for draining chemical works and things like that, you know. Yeah.
So what were the sort of eating rates? You took your own sandwiches and whatnot?
Well, you did for your lunch, but fortunately, even in them days, there was a canteen, there was a works canteen, which was very good as well. I used to get a dinner for sixpence. Yeah, sixpence, and you used to get a full dinner for that.
And did you on the whole tend to do that because it was good value?
Oh, yeah. I used the canteen all my working life.
Oh.
I always supported the canteen, yeah.
Yeah.
The only time I didn't use the canteen was in my later working life when I worked in shift work. But in the days, you know, but I always used the canteen, yeah.
Were there any opportunities to go and learn more about the trade, like sort of night school?
Yeah, I went to night school. I started off at Stubbins Tech. The old tech, which was out Stubbins Lane.
Opposite the fire station.
Yeah, which is a house now.
Yes.
Yeah.
What did you study there?
I went for, it was just a basic course like of English, maths and you know, mainly that.
Yes.
I just used to go all night, and then I did that for 12 months, and then started going to Bury Tech, which had a big textile... you know, a part of the college itself, you know, along with a lot of other things, you know, like engineering courses and things like
that.
And
you were doing?
But I went for textiles, yeah. Yeah, learning how to, you know, make weaves up and drafts and...
Was it sitting guilds or...?
Oh, yeah, later on, as you went later on, yeah.
But initially it was...
It was just the first year course, second year. Yeah. Third year and that, you know.
Did you finish up with a diploma or anything?
No, I didn't. I didn't take it that far.
Oh.
I really rue that I didn't do that, but I just didn't go that far, you know. I went for 3 years, mm-hmm. and that was as far as I went, you know.
So what happened? You were at warehouse for sort of the first 2 years.
And yeah, and then I moved up into what they called the felting rooms, where on these fabrics which were woven on the woolen looms, they were then made into a circular. They were joined by ladies, yeah, who joined them together. Who actually, if you can say like they hand wove it together and joined it up. And I went working up in there.
So what did you'd arrange it, you'd get it ready for them to do?
Well, when I went up there at first, I went really in the office side of it, doing a bit of office work. But I also helped outside. The foreman in that end there that time was Jeff Lummox. And there was a man who used to bring fabrics in, you know, cloth in for the ladies to felt, was Albert Taylor. And I used to help him at times, you know. And then they used to have to be taken down off these boards and wrapped up. And then they were taken to another department to be finished.
And that was called the felting room, was it?
That was called the felting room, yeah. There were quite a few ladies worked in there, yeah. Well, they were all ladies, really, you know. They used to sit at boards and...
Half a dozen, or?
No, there were more than that. I would say there was possibly 20, 25. And some of them worked on a part-time basis. You know, some started at 9 o'clock, well, 4 o'clock if they had children at home. In them days, they used to allow them to do that, you know. But it was always on a day basis. I mean, there was no shift work. At Porritts then.
So what time was your day?
Half past seven. When I started at first, it was half past seven, well, half past five. And then it got changed to quarter to eight, half past five. And then I was changed as you went through, you know.
And were you working Saturdays?
No. Didn't work any overtime at all. No, they didn't work any overtime in the warehouse or in the felt room. No.
Saturdays and Sundays were your own?
Yes, you used to finish on a Friday night and that was it, yeah. Yeah, well, Monday morning.
So how long were you in the felting room?
I was in the felting room then for about 12 months. And then I had to go and do my national service. I went to do my national service in 1953. I went to do national service for 2 years. And,
what were you in with that? Anything related to textiles?
No, nothing. I was in the Royal Army Pay Corps.
Oh.
So, I don't know how I come to be in that, to be honest. I applied to go in the Service Corps, the Royal Engineers and Ordnance Corps, to be a driver, you know, but, yeah.
You took as a clerk, when did you?
Yeah.
And where were you based?
I went to do my national service training, my basic training, down at Devizes in Wiltshire.
Yes.
And from there, I did 10, 12 weeks down there. And from there, I was posted to Leicester. I was in Leicester till I was demobbed. Yeah.
And they kept me job for you all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I came out... I didn't know whether I really wanted to go back or not. To be honest, I didn't know whether I wanted to go back or not because it tended to change a little bit. Anyway, I decided to go back, and when I went back, this is when I started really being involved on the production side of the textile industry. I went into the weaving shed then.
Are you still on wool?
Yeah, I'm still on the woolen side, yeah. And Aaron Robinson, who was the under manager at that time, the manager was Mr. Billy Starkey, who lived up Berenew Road. And they put a proposal to me, you know, to go and work in the weaving shed to learn, the process through. And I started warping. I started to learn warping with Stanley Fish. He was a warper. He was a senior warper. And Steve Banyard, they had two warping, what they call warping barrels. And I went learning with them to learn warping. And
how long was that for?
I would say it was for. It was just really to give me a basic idea of it. I had a rough guess, I would say, about maybe 3-4 months, maybe a bit longer, but roughly, nothing less than 3-4 months, no. And from there, I went to the next process, which was drawing in, which was drawing the ends through the heddles to prepare the warps to go into the looms. And I worked with, there was a lady drawer in, Adelaide Warburton, she was called, and there was a man drawer in, which was Stanley Hall, and I went working with those two. And
how many looms were they working
in? In the weaving shed there at that time, there was roughly, I would say, about 20 looms. And they were a German type of loom. They were called a CC loom. They were a German loom. And they were mainly, they ranged from about 10 foot wide up to the biggest, which was 26 foot wide. But on the 26 footers, there was two men. There was two men weavers.
Oh.
Because the 26 footers were too big for ladies, you know, and the range did the looms that the ladies ran 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 foot wide, you know, yeah.
And how was the shuttle thrown? What was that shuttle thrown mechanically?
No, it was with a picking stick and mechanical system under the loom. Which activated the picking stick too.
But you hadn't got to the weaving side. You got to setting up, haven't you? Done the warping.
Yeah.
And then
we did the drawing in.
You're drawing in.
Yeah.
You still haven't got ready for any weaving yet, have you?
No.
So how long did you do the drawing in?
The drawing in, I did that again for roughly about 4 months, you know, something like that. And then I went on to the weaving side then.
You're actually producing cloth now.
Yeah. And I went learning weaving with a man called Jack Dalton, who used to live in Strongstry, in one of the houses, in one of the mill houses in Strongstry. And then I just carried on weaving then. More or less, I worked all the time there. I was weaving for quite... I would say maybe 3-4 years, something like that, maybe a bit longer.
Did you progress from the narrow machines up to the big one?
No, I started off on the big one. As a matter of fact, I only ran the big ones.
Oh.
I only ran the big ones. I didn't go on the small ones, because Sima said they were all ladies on the smaller ones.
I thought they might train you on a small
one. Well, they did learn some men, because in later on, we went on to a two-shift system. And then they progressed to a three-shift system, you know. So there
when
was.
When did that come in? What stage did you when you were
weaving? When I've been weaving about maybe 3 years, something like that. And then we carried on weaving. I carried on weaving then, some I say, for about 4 or 5 years. And then they needed overlookers, tacklers, to maintain the looms. Because with them being on a three-shift system, you had to have maintenance people to look after them and make sure that they ran. So they asked me if I'd like to go tackling.
So by this time, you knew a lot about looms.
Yeah. Well, I knew quite a bit, yeah. From that, from there on, I was on the maintenance side of looking after the looms. And so I carried on being a tackler on a three-shift system for quite a number of years on the woolen side. And then they decided to move the woolen side itself, the weaving side, up to Elm Shore. Joseph Porritt's at Elm Shore. One or two of the the men weavers went up there. But I can't say I really wanted to go to Elmshore, but if there had been no other choice, I would have gone. But at that time, now we're talking about the cotton side, they were looking to go on to, well, they were on a two-shift system, but they needed more tacklers, more maintenance people. So the approach through the manager, which by that time was Harold Robinson, Billy Starkey retired by then, and they asked him, you know, if they could approach me to see if I was interested to go over onto the cotton side. So I said yes. So I moved over to the cotton side, which the looms were totally different to what I've been used to. They were big, heavy cotton felt looms, which most of them were built by Bobby Hall, Robert Hall's in Bury. Yeah. And I mean, the building and everything's pulled down is Robert Hall's. But yeah, most of the looms then in the weaving department on the cotton side were built by Bobby Hall's. They were having some new ones put in. So they were looking to, you know, increase their the people, you know, who looked after them and maintained them. So I had to start a new training programme then of totally different material to handle against woolen and cotton, different, you know, size of looms.
What sizes were the cotton looms?
Well, you were talking from 16 foot, and the biggest one that they had was 32 foot wide.
So they got up a size.
Yeah, they call that Big Bertha. And yeah, but it wasn't just the width of them, it was the actual structure of them as well. You know, people used to come in, they used to look at them, they were amazed, you know, how big they was. But yeah, and the actual mechanism was different to what I've been used to. It was still like a mechanical picking, but it was a different setup with a great. It were all driven, you know, all driven from the crankshafts and things like that. But yeah, totally different it was.
Who taught you then?
Well, the foreman who were in charge at that particular time, on one shift there was Fred Greenhalgh. And then the other one was Jim Rhodes. Jim Rhodes lived in Stubbins. Fred Greenhalgh lived down Stretton Road at Oakenbrook at that particular time. Yeah, and they were there all. You know, they were there.
So he was basically learning on the job.
Yeah, yeah. And I also worked with another man who lives up Peel Brown now, Jimmy Taylor. You know,
you go as a pair, would you, to look at a problem, would you?
Yeah, because some of the it needed, and they had labourers as well. You had labourers as well because some of the equipment was really, really heavy, you know, and you couldn't handle it on your own, and it needed you needed not just a pair of hands, you needed, you know, two pair of hands, sometimes three pair of hands.
So what happened when you found a faulty bit that needed some repair? Did you have your own workshop?
Or? Oh, yeah, we had our own workshop. You had your own drills and different things like that. You had your own tools and spanners and things. And they also had, we also had an engineering department, you know, where they had lathes and things like that.
So the maintenance workshop was separate from the engineering workshop.
Yeah, yeah. You only went to them if it was, you know, it was something out of, you know, your realm or whatever. You know, you couldn't do it.
So this was a tackler's workshop.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, how big was it? What was it sort of?
Not very big, really. No bigger than this room, you know.
About 10 feet by
14
feet.
Yeah, maybe something like that. And then sometimes the job couldn't be done by your own maintenance engineers. You'd have to go out to people outside.
You might say it fits back to halls, would you?
Yeah, sometimes like that. Or maybe sometimes we used to use a place quite a lot at Haslingden, Kays at Haslingden. They were engineers, you know, and they used to come down, you know, with the lorry and take it away and
take the whole.
Whatever wanted.
I mean, you wouldn't really recondition a loom, would you? You kept it running, but would the occasion sort of take the whole loom away?
No. It was mainly if it was like a big broken part at that particular time, along with the maintenance department. They also had their own blacksmith and people like that, you know, who did welding and things like that. But sometimes they were too big even for them to handle, you know, so. This is where Kays at Haslingden used to come in. The man who ran it up there, who was the manager, or you know, who ran Kays, was Donald Butterworth. He was a smashing bloke with Donald. But yeah.
What was the workshop doing? If you were sort of maintaining the looms, what was the actual workshop doing? All right, they were helping you out occasionally, but what were they doing the rest of the time?
The workshop. What?
Not the Tackler's workshop, the other workshop.
Oh, the others. Well, they had all the on the woolen side, you know, up to it being moved up to Elmshore. They had carding engines and they had spinning frames. They had ring frames. They had a lot. You know, they had a lot of work to do. It weren't just a matter of, you know, they also had their own joiners. They had their own painters.
Yes, there was
Harry Hoyle. Harry Hoyle was one, yeah. Yes. And his brother Jim and his father, they were there when I started, yeah. And they had their own joiners, yeah.
So basically the workshop was covering the whole of the factory.
The old factory, the old...
Yeah. You had a particular interest in the weaving.
Just in the weaving, yeah.
It would help you out if you...
If need be, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I've got the picture.
But the actual maintenance and running of the looms was down to the tackling department, the overlookers department, whatever you...
And was it a busy time? I mean, I've heard stories where tacklers are supposed to be sitting there doing nothing because all the looms are running down.
Yeah.
How true is that?
Well, I would say, you know, the old saying was that if the manager came in and seen that the overlooker sat down having a cup of tea or reading his paper and all the looms were running, he was quite happy. But it didn't always work like that. It didn't always work like that, I can tell you. Especially with the big looms that we had, because there was a lot of weight, there was a lot of strain, you know, on the actual running of the looms, you know. They were big, heavy, thick fabrics, what they wove, you know. They weren't just...
Wow, when you say thick...
They weren't little, thin, flimsy. They're talking about a 3-ply fabric, a 2-ply, a 3-ply, a 4-ply fabric, you know.
What, you're getting up to sort of quarter
inch? Depending on the diameter, the thickness of the yarns that were being put in, and also, you know, the warp itself. I mean, on quite a lot of the looms, they had a top beam, a bottom beam, and they also had what they call a centre beam, which was what they call a cord beam, which was quite a thick diameter yarn, which more or less bound the two, the top and the bottom one together, you know, and bound them together.
So it was sort of
a two-layer. Well, really, some of them were three, as I said, 3 and 4 ply,
right.
And they were quite heavy, you know, fabrics, and some of the yarns that they used to put in, you know, they were six fold, you know, they were all, you know, twisted, six-fold, and they had seven-fold.
You're still on cotton, aren't you?
Are you still on cotton, yeah.
You're still
on the cotton side, yeah.
Yeah, synthetic. But let's continue your story, which is really what we're interested in.
Yeah.
So you did the tackling for, you said, about 5 years?
That was on the woolen side. Then on the cotton side, I was tackling then for... About 10 years, I think about 10 years, yeah, something like that. I can't be exact, but I would say about 10 years. And then they were looking then to have, because it was getting quite big then, and they were looking, they'd expanded then, they got more looms in, they got some big, heavier looms in, more modern looms, from a place called Wilson and Longbottoms at Barnsley.
Yeah.
And these were supposed to be up-to-date looms, because at that particular time, you know, they were looking to exporting fabrics, which they still did, and then they got these looms in, and they was quite heavy, as I said, big.
Which year are we into now?
1970s, yeah, I would say so, yeah. I would say we're getting up in the 60s, in the middle 60s anyway, mid-60s. I would say mid-60s, going on for the 70s, yeah. Yeah, and they started getting these looms in from Wilson and Longbottoms, and they got five of them. They got five of them, yeah. And they... they thought they'd made them really strong, the Wilson and Longbottoms. But when we started weaving a fabric, it was a two-ply fabric, which was, it was as solid as that table. And it was an order that they got for Russia at that particular time. And if I say that the gearing, what we call on the let-off to feed your warp in for your weaving process, was they were cast steel with the gears, and they used to just break teeth out like it was shelling peas. They just used to break out. And we finished up where we had to get all steel drive gear, let-off gears, all steel, because cast just wouldn't stand the strain. And we used to have on the actual sleigh what the shuttle runs on, and it does the actual beat up of beating your weft into your warp, you know, to make your weave. They used to have what they call sleigh legs in, and they were like a letter, like a D in a way, you know, so that they had this bend with them. And we used to break those as well. And in the finish, all those had to be made out of solid steel.
Not cast, they were cast iron before?
They were cast iron before.
Yeah.
Cast steel. Yeah. And they just, yeah. And they were absolutely, you know, and yeah.
So you did this involved the change in job for you then, did it? When these
Not at that particular time. I was still tackling when these came in, and then all these looms were built and the foundations were put in, and they had these looms installed, and yeah, and we used to again we worked a shift system. Two shift system at first, and then
keep talking.
So at that time, as the Wilson on the bottom looms came in, then you know I worked on tackling then on the looms for quite a number of years, possibly 5 years, along with the Bobby Orr looms as well. And then they wanted more supervision on the three-shift system, which they had started. And they wanted someone in overall charge, you know, not just being a tackler and actually looking after the shift as well. So they asked me if I'd be a supervisor on one shift, and they made two other people into supervisors. So we had a supervisor on each shift then. We worked that, and that was like Monday to Friday. It didn't include weekend working or anything like that. So then I progressed, as I say, onto supervising. And that involved a different outlook again. Then I was in charge of a shift. I was in charge of personnel. And I had the, you might say, the overall authority of whether the fabric was rejected, whether it could be repaired, if there was a fault came in the fabric, or I had to, you know, be in charge of people as well. So it was a different ball game altogether. So I was a supervisor then for what I was maybe over 10 years, maybe 12 years. And
how many people were you supervising?
On a particular shift, I would say when it started out at first, I would say there was about 10 or 12 people on a shift. That included tacklers as well. You know, there were two tacklers on a shift. Supervisor, two tacklers, and then the weavers.
And what were the shifts at that stage?
They were 6-well 2, 2-well 10, and the night shift was 10 o'clock, well 6 o'clock the following morning.
Well, that's a long shift.
Yeah.
That shift.
Well, yeah, it's only 8 hours, same as the others, but it tends to be a long time, yeah, because, I couldn't say that I was...
Did you have to take it in turn? Did it sort of
you rotated the shift, yeah. What we actually did, we started off doing our shift system, 6 to 2, 2 to 10, and 10 well 6. But what we did find was that when you was working the night shift, you finished at 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and then you was coming back at 6 o'clock on a Monday morning to do the early shift. And what a lot of people found, and it's surprising with a three-shift system, how many people have said this, that on a Saturday night, you wasn't too bad, you used to sleep, but the Sunday night, you couldn't sleep. And you were getting up at 6 o'clock, you're getting up at 5 o'clock, whatever, to go on at 6. And by the middle of the week, you was absolutely shattered. So what we did, we all got together and we went to the management and explained to it. And what we did, we finished at 6 o'clock when you was on the night shift on the Saturday morning, but you didn't come in then till 2 o'clock on Monday. So in other words, we reversed the shifts. You did like nights, then you did 2 to 10, and then you did 6 to 2. So that when you finished on the 6 to 2 on the Friday, when you finished at 2 o'clock on Friday, if you wasn't working Saturday morning, you didn't come on then till 10 o'clock Monday night. So it works out very well, and everybody liked that. Yeah. Everybody liked that, yeah.
Such a simple...
Yeah, but it's surprising, you know, when you talk and you get to, and you listen to people, yeah. So that's what we did. So I carried on supervising then for quite a number of years. And by that time, when I was supervising, we'd gone on to synthetics. A lot of the cotton fabrics were being phased out, and we went on to synthetics, what we call monofilament wires, and we progressed onto them, you know.
Was it a gradual transition?
Yes, it was, because we didn't know how to handle the synthetics, we didn't know how to, the monofilament, we didn't know how to wind it onto a pern to be put into the shuttle to weave with. It was a totally different control system that you had to have, because, you know, if you think of catgut on a fishing line, you know, if you let it go slack, it all tends to curl up, doesn't it? And that's what we had the problem with. We tried it under different tensions and different winding techniques, perm winding techniques, and all sorts, you know. And it was in the early years of...
Which period are we in now?
We're talking now the period, I would say, the 70s. Early to mid-70s. And we started with these monofilament wires.
Why did they go over to monofilament?
Well, because most people, the competitors, were going over to them. And the paper machines wanted fabrics that lasted a lot longer on the machine, so they didn't have the downtime. So they weren't losing money by having machines stopped. We also, as I say, our competitors were going over.
So they were stronger, were they?
Oh yeah, they were a lot, lot stronger, but they were also very susceptible to damage. And once they were damaged, they couldn't be repaired. Not in the early stages, anyway. I mean, and when they were fitting a machine in the in the paper mills, sometimes somebody would happen to drop a weight, and you know, it'd go through one of these fabrics, and you were talking in the later stages. You know, some of these monofilament wires were costing anything from £7,000 up to £40,000, £50,000, £60,000 a piece.
Is that for the belt?
Yeah,
That's for the belt for the machine.
Yeah, and they also found that there were better drainage, so therefore the paper machines weren't using as much electricity to get the suction through the fabric on the boxes to bring the moisture away.
Yeah.
And, you know...
I mean, to go back to where they dropped a weight on it, could you sort of cut out that section and weave in another section at all?
No, we are talking about the paper machines now. If we had a hole in a fabric...
Yeah. If they damage it while trying to put it into a paper machine, could they send it back and you would sort of say, yes, it's
well,
going to cost
yeah.
you, we'll put another
piece in? Oh, yeah. Yeah, paper mills used to send them back for repair.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes, as I say, in the later stages, when we'd had a lot of experience with them, in another department, in what they call the seaming department,
yes.
They would probably look at it and they could, you know, mend some of the ends. But if it was a great big hole, it was very, very difficult to...
I was thinking of cutting a piece out.
Well,
seaming it.
Yeah, they could cut it out. They could cut it out and put a fresh seam in and, you know, and do it from there.
I mean, it would be expensive, but it wouldn't be like losing the whole fabric.
No, it wouldn't be like losing the whole fabric. A lot depended. Sometimes accidents happened on the paper machines when the fabric had been on maybe weeks or months, you know, and they still wanted, you know, it repaired.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was very difficult because the running time on the machine, it had probably smoothed out and it had flattened, altered the shape, the diameter of the warp and the weft and things like that, you know. And, they were all things to be looked at. But, yeah, they did send them back. Oh, yeah, quite a lot of, especially, as I say, in the later years, they used to send them back quite a lot because, as I said, they were very, very expensive fabrics, you know. And
so that's where you were when you retired, was it, as a supervisor?
No, I finished up as weaving manager.
So you went from supervising
to weaving manager.
And what does the weaving manager do?
Well, the weaving manager was overall control of everything. Winding, warping, yarns coming in, ordering parts for the looms, ordering parts and... looking after the health and safety side of the department. And
but you came off the shift system now?
I came off the shift system, yeah. Fred Greenhalgh, who was head of the department, who was one of the senior tacklers when I went tackling on the Cotton side, he finished up as manager, but he had a bad accident, Fred, and he couldn't continue working. He carried on for quite some time, but he couldn't carry on, so they asked me if I'd be weaving manager. So
when did he take over? Which year was that?
About 19...
90s, and
it was in the 70s anyway. It was in the 70s, yeah. 70 might have been about 70. Yeah, it'd be about 78, something like that, when I took over. Yeah, 1978.
Was that an interesting job?
Yeah, it was. Again, taking over then, you know, you're not. We've just been talking now about age.